So it's a pay-as-you-go way to consume broadband, making it more like putting gas in the gas tank. So if I need one day's worth of broadband, I can pay to keep that service active. Other times, we can just let the account draw down.
This is episode 291 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I'm Lisa Gonzalez. For about 10 years, the community of Wilson, North Carolina has been served by its own publicly owned fiber optic network. Greenlight Community Broadband has brought fast, affordable, reliable connectivity to residents and businesses throughout the community of approximately 49,000 people. Along the way, the utility has attracted employers, kept local dollars in the community, and instilled a sense of pride of ownership. Now Greenlight is experimenting with ways to connect residents who might have difficulties connecting to traditional carriers due to credit or income limitations. In this episode, Christopher talks with Will Acock from Greenlight about their inventive program to get more people online. In the interview, you'll hear Christopher mention the nearby community of Pine Tops, where Wilson extended Greenlight service in 2016. After a court decision that reversed an FCC order and a state law that carved out a shaky exception for Pine Tops, the tiny community is on the verge of losing Greenlight service. There's a lot of history there, and we discussed the situation in episode 226 of the podcast back in November 2016. You can learn more about Wilson, Greenlight, and Pine Tops at muninetworks.org. Now let's get on with the interview. Here's Christopher with Will Acock from Wilson, North Carolina.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. I'm Chris Mitchell with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance up in Minneapolis, where it's probably a lot colder than North Carolina, where my guest Will Acock is the general manager of Greenlight Community Broadband. Welcome back to the show, Will.
Thanks, Chris. Happy to be here again.
I'm really excited to talk to you about something that I first learned about from a column that Susan Crawford did talking about how Wilson has done tremendous things in terms of connecting low-income folks. But let's start with just a quick reminder for folks. Wilson Greenlight Community Broadband, what is it?
So Greenlight Community Broadband is an operating department of the City of Wilson. We operate our community's fiber to the home network. We've been around since 2008, and we provide residential, commercial, institutional services, both broadband as well as video, voice, and Metronet services.
Right, and we're not going to talk today about the situation with Pine Tops, but people may have seen Do Not Pass Go, a wonderful video, short documentary about your efforts there to connect some of your neighbors. But that's sort of not the subject today. We're talking more about the urban stuff.
Right.
So, Will, we're going to come to a new program, or at least new to my knowledge, program in which people can pay ahead to connect. And we'll talk about why that's important. But I think it's worth starting more generally. Why is it important for the City of Wilson to drive connectivity to folks who might not have the means of middle-class folks to just go out and connect? Why is it important to bring everyone on the network?
Well, really, it's about driving more return on the community's investment in the fiber optic network. And so the more people we're able to connect, in particular, the more people who've traditionally not been able to have access were able to connect, the more benefit we'll realize. Of course, the obvious benefit of more revenue being generated by the network itself. And then probably the more important benefit, which is, connecting folks who've been on sort of the wrong side of the digital divide to next generation broadband and enabling them to participate in the modern economy, which we are confident, helps with workforce development and generally speaking helps grow the economy of our community.
It's interesting that you phrase it that way in some ways. I mean, and this gets into some common misconceptions, but the community, it certainly built the network in terms of you're a utility that's owned by the community, but taxpayers didn't pay for the network, right? You didn't use any taxpayer dollars.
No, we did not. No, we were originally funded through COPs or certificates of participation, and since then we've been operating on the revenues the network has generated.
But yet you still have this sense of we're all in it together, and it's very much a community-driven kind of process.
Right, it's the nature of public infrastructure, whether you're talking about you know, water, roads, broadband, or electric. The purpose is to serve the community and help the community to prosper.
So, Will, as we move back into the main reason I wanted to talk to you here, can you tell me a little bit about this program that Susan Crawford had noted and which I think has not gotten enough attention, the ability for people to take service from Greenlight who may have a low or a very poor credit rating?
Right. One of the things that we've identified is that, you know, credit rating can be a barrier to gaining access to broadband service. So one of the things we wanted to do was to remove that barrier. And we found that prepay was an effective way to do it. So essentially someone can come in and establish an account, and as long as they keep a very minimal balance on the account in a prepay status, they're able to maintain the service. So it's a pay-as-you-go way to consume broadband, making it more like, you know, thinking about it in terms of putting gas in the gas tank. So if I need one day's worth of broadband, I can pay to keep that service active, perhaps because my child has a big project and they need to work on. And then importantly, other times when maybe, you know, there are other budgetary priorities, we can just let the account draw down. The service becomes inactive, but it's still there. It does nothing to damage their credit. There's no collections. There's no fundamental disconnect process they go through. Simply sitting there waiting to be recharged, if you will. And again, people can pay for as little as they want, really, down to even just one day's worth of service. One of the other benefits of the program is that if someone had a past due balance with us, the program can be set up so that that back balance can be slowly drawn down over time. Each time they make a payment, a portion of that payment can go to the past due amount while continuing to keep service enabled. So, again, it provides access and helps people to begin to even potentially help improve their credit over time.
And how has the response been from the public to this service?
Well, it's certainly something that we've seen grow pretty rapidly, something that as word of mouth gets around the community and as we begin to market it, people are very eager to sign up for the service, particularly when they learn that there's no deposits, no credit checks required, they can gain access. And then don't have to go through the disconnect, reconnect process that is typical with most service providers if the account does end up past due or drawn down.
Well, I think it's really worth just dwelling on that for a second, because many of us who have had the good fortune not to have significant employment interruption or other medical challenges that we were unable to deal with, you know, it's important to note that in many cities, if a person becomes past due on the one provider or the two providers, that they're effectively locked out of future communication services, right?
Right, and that's one of the things we hope to overcome here in the community by offering this program. People can always have access and just have that account there, in essence, waiting for when they're able to and desire to recharge the account and re-enable their internet service.
And one of the things that I think many municipal networks find when they're starting is that it's one of the challenges you face in the first several years is this issue of credit. And I'm curious, you know, for other municipal networks that might be listening and getting ideas, is this the kind of thing that you need to wait a little bit until you're more mature with your cash flow to be able to do? Because, I mean, I'm assuming that, and I don't know what your numbers are exactly, but I'm guessing that to connect a new home is probably like $1,000. And to do that on a pay-ahead plan, it might be difficult for a newer network to handle.
When we first launched, one of the things that we realized was there was a certain amount of churn in the network where people would connect and disconnect. And, of course, part of that was due to payment issues. And the result of this churn was we had many installed locations across the community that were not active. And so one of the reasons we went out and found this idea of prepay was to remedy that problem, wanting to make sure that each installed location has every ability to continue to generate revenue for the network and allow the resident to be connected to broadband.
That's great. I mean, it's actually kind of funny in some ways that a program that seems, you know, almost to be more social work is actually driven by good business sense in some ways.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the priorities is keeping all the assets that you had deployed in productive utilization, both generating revenue and providing the benefit to the resident. So it's pretty basic business principle to do this.
So if I remember correctly, which is it seems more and more of a problem lately, it's been about a year since you and I talked about the program where you were installing public housing areas, developments with
right.
A low-cost service. How is that working out?
It's working well. It continues to be popular. I'd say we have just over half of the residents in our public housing developments opting for the service. So we continue to see lots of adoption there and people enjoying the program and benefiting from it.
That's a $10 a month, 50 megabit symmetrical approach?
Right, and we actually are providing the service to the housing authority themselves. So it's a bulk contract. So they just tell us how many units they want and have active, and then they handle the billing to the resident themselves. So we have one customer, and they manage the relationship on the other side.
Well, I guess that's one lesson learned. Are there any other lessons learned for other folks who might be thinking about doing something like this?
Well, I think just being open to those types of partnerships, being able to sit down and explore things with various stakeholders like public housing is how you derive these novel solutions.
And one other one that we've written about in the past with the help of Catherine Rice, who's no doubt listening to this show. Hey, Catherine, is the SPOT program, which gives kids an opportunity after school to learn some more skills and to have a place to go for some who may not have a better choice.
Yes, sharing positive outcomes together is what it stands for. And it's essentially a youth-oriented program that provides after-school care and educational opportunities for children here in our community. We also have held our first hackathon here this year, coincident with our Whirligig Festival in November. And interestingly, the Housing Authority is now working with the Cramden Institute to provide training for their residents. And once they go through the training with Cramden, they're actually being given devices. So it's really a comprehensive solution in our public housing now.
So, well, you know, I have to say, as someone who's gone back and listened to some of the arguments back in the late 2000s when, you know, there was some doubters, some people who have since become big fans of the network. This, in my mind, seems like it's been a bigger success than many people even hope for. You know, it strikes me that when this network was built, it was a time in which people were hoping to have some more stability in pricing and a better option and that sort of thing. You know, as we're almost 10 years on from when the network launched, you know, do you have any reflections on what's been different than you expected when you took this project on?
Well, you know, just seeing all the new ways that we continue to uncover that we can, you know, bring value to our organization and to our community by leveraging the network. Clearly, when you look at what's on the horizon in terms of the Internet of Things, 5G technologies, the continued push around smart cities, and what does that mean for micropolitan communities, I think potential of the network is just now beginning to be realized, and there's much more to come. And, of course, when you look at the clear trend towards over-the-top delivery of video content, you can see how this whole entire industry segment has evolved and evolved in such a way that really brings technology closer and closer to our network.
Yeah, well, I just have to say, I mean, I find it inconvenient in many times to refer to Chattanooga and others because people have been very familiar with it. But for anyone who's listening to this, who, if this is your first introduction to Wilson, I strongly encourage you to take a look. The impact on jobs, on helping the community out have been tremendous. And I can't say enough about what you've done down there, Will. I know that Eastern North Carolina is facing some hard economic times, but I think you're providing hope to a lot of folks and showing a real path forward. I really hope that that you can continue it, and it'd be great if we can see some expansion and whatnot, because, well, I got to tell you, you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you very much. Again, it's always a pleasure speaking with you.
That was Christopher with Will Acock from Greenlight, the municipal fiber network in Wilson, North Carolina. Will has been on the podcast before. Check out episodes 236, 226, 110, and 70. We have transcripts from this and other podcasts available at muninetworks.org/broadbandbits. Email us at podcasts@muninetworks.org with your ideas for the show. Follow Chris on Twitter. His handle is @communitynets. Follow muninetworks.org stories on Twitter. The handle is @muninetworks. Subscribe to this podcast and the other ILSR podcasts, Building Local Power and the Local Energy Rules podcast. You can access them on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Never miss out on our original research. You can subscribe to our monthly newsletter at ilsr.org. We want to thank Arnie Huseby for the song Warm Duck Shuffle, licensed through Creative Commons. And we also want to thank you for listening to episode 291 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast.